Do you believe art can change the world? So do I. On this show, we meet artists whose work is doing just that. Welcome to Art Heals All Wounds. I'm your host, Pam Uzel. Some of you may know that I've made some documentary films. There are different types of documentary films, and I would say that what I did was take oral histories and try to craft them into a story where the subjects being represented felt like I had gotten it right. The best feeling when you're collecting oral histories is finding a story about something that really challenges the conventional history and just flips the narrative on that topic on its head. I would say about a year or so ago, I found a podcast that to me is really this same idea, collecting oral histories that challenge a widespread and accepted story. When I listened to this show, I thought, oh my God, they're telling my story and they're getting it right. Sarah Reinhart and Louise Brown are two friends and former business partners who both happen to be adopted. After many conversations about being adopted, they started their podcast, Adoption, The Making of Me. They began with similar stories to what many adoptees say about how much their adoptive families loved them, that they were told that they were chosen children, how lucky they supposedly were. While none of that is necessarily untrue, it's also not nearly as straightforward as it sounds. In the era that Louise, Sarah, and I were adopted, babies were considered to be blank slates, ready to be molded to seamlessly fit into the adoptive family. Some of us were never held by our birth mothers and lived for months with a foster family, then one day suddenly placed in a different family. That's essentially my story, but I never thought about how traumatic that would be to an infant until I had my own children. My oldest daughter, for the first many months of her life, screamed if anyone other than me or her father held her. She knew us from day one, and she understood that we were the ones to keep her safe and fed and secure. Louise and Sarah began sharing on their show their own and other adoptees' stories about those nagging parts of our emotional lives. Why do we have so little in common with our adoptive families? Why does it feel like we're always a little bit on the outside looking in? Trust issues. And why didn't my birth parents want me? What's wrong with me? Why don't I, a fully grown adult, have a right to my own birth records? Sarah and Louise have created a safe place to talk about those experiences and the trauma at the root of it. Every time I do a story about adoption, I think about wonderful friends I have who've adopted children, and my own adoptive parents. How would they have felt? Am I being hurtful? Ungrateful? What I've learned from Sarah and Louise on Adoption, The Making of Me, is that we are all in this together. Adoptees, birth parents, and adoptive parents. What I do feel grateful for is that Louise and Sarah are challenging a system that in the end serves no one and are asking all of us affected by it to demand better. Their work is changing the way that we understand and talk about adoption. You want to know how you can really help me keep this show going? Follow me on your favorite listening app. So easy, right? And if you really want to give the show a boost, leave me a 5-star rating or review. Hi, Sarah and Louise. Thank you so much for being on Art Heals All Wounds. I feel like I'm here with friends as opposed to a guest. So can you both introduce yourselves, who you are, what you do, just a little bit? Sarah, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm Sarah Reinhart. I am a co-host with Louise of the podcast Adoption, The Making of Me. You were on our podcast. Each week, we discuss a chapter of a book we're reading to do with adoption, and then we bring on a fellow adoptee to tell their story. I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, where I've been for 3.5 years. It was a pandemic move.
And Louise.
I'm Louise Brown, also co-host with Sarah. How lucky am I? We are with friends. You were recently on our podcast, and I do feel like, oh, we're friends now. It's neat. I'm coming to you from the Central Coast of California, also a pandemic move. And Sarah and I used to live together in Los Angeles. That's how we know each other. We had a business together. Now we have a podcast together.
Okay. Well, the other reason I feel like you're friends is because I listen to your podcast kind of religiously every week. And
aww.
Yeah. And
you're a Patreon?
Yes. I just became a Patreon member, which is really so cool. I feel very, very good. That's money well spent.
Thank you.
I want to go back to your meeting and connecting as adoptees, because this season is about connection. And I've heard it on your show a little bit way back in the early days. But can you just tell again how you guys met, how you made this connection that you were both adoptees and decided to do this show? So, Sarah.
Yeah, it's kind of a threefold thing, probably. We met, our kids were both in third grade, I believe. We both have sons.
Yeah.
And we had a mutual friend who we were both friends with, and she one night said, let's go out. So we went out to dinner, and then we went to play pool, and it came out that Louise and I were both adopted, and just immediately had that connection that you really only have with a fellow adoptee who, you know, it's like you're part of a small percentage of people, right? So you immediately connect, and it's understanding the weirdness of it. Although I say that, but I didn't think of it as weird until many years later when we started this podcast. So we just became good friends. Our sons were good friends through those elementary school years and into middle school. And then we were both kind of going through changes in our life and started this ice cream truck. And we spent hours on the ice cream truck talking about, you know, we paid a lot of lip service to being adopted, but I had kind of, as a younger child, my adoption was one thing, but then my parents got divorced when I was 7 and my mom left. So I've conflated a lot of my stuff with which is which, you know, which wound goes to which trauma. So we would talk about adoption on the ice cream truck, and it wasn't really making jokes about, I push people away, I'm adopted, but not necessarily really connecting to it. And then we sold the truck, and then we both did other things, and then left Los Angeles. And it was just kind of a perfect storm of Louise had called me and said, oh, we should do a podcast talking to women about careers in their 50s. I'm like, maybe we should do something like about adoption. I had been marinating in my head for years about doing a documentary about meeting all of my family, and which never really happened, but this happened. So It just, once we decided to do that, it just kind of all fell into place and happened pretty quickly and easily. Yeah.
Organically. I have one thing to add. When we went out to play pool, we did have our mutual friend who we're still both close to. And she always says, I didn't even need to be there after you met. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Guess I'm not here anymore. Cause we were both like, oh, cause we did have those weird adoptee connections, like push you away and all that and issues, you know, but we didn't delve into them. But you connect with an adoptee immediately.
Well, one thing you said, Sarah, really struck me is that when you grow up, especially kind of the age that we are, and you have issues, you do conflate them with other things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and especially when you're told adoption is a wonderful thing.
I was defensive about my adoption issues because I actually had a therapist bring it up in marriage counseling once. I was like, that's not why this is happening.
It's him.
Yes, it is. It's 100% him. Oh boy, it is. Half me, maybe more. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And One thing I came to the realization of, because I think a lot about, well, why do I love this podcast so much? We all tell the same stories and we all tell unique stories. But I have sometimes asked myself, well, how long can I listen to adoption stories? And it's like, well, forever I can listen to them. And I have some thoughts about, well, why is that? But I'm wondering what you two would say about why do we need to hear these stories? That's what I think. It's not just that we like to hear them. Why do we need to hear these stories?
Well, you talked about connection. That was your theme right now in your podcast series. And for me, I feel like all of a sudden I have a connection that my whole life I've been searching for, not just because of Sarah and I's podcast, but because of the community and what our podcast has brought us to communities of people that we would never have spoken to or gotten to know all over the country and the world, really. We've had people from all over the world. And I mean, I honestly feel like I could land in Amsterdam and call up David Anker and have a coffee more comfortably than calling like an old friend from work, maybe. There's just this connection. And we have a Patreon Zoom, Sarah and I, for Saturday most months. If you want to join our Patreon, $10 level, a little plug there. I feel like it's just so nice. And I can't explain it to my husband. I can't explain it to outside friends. We have an adoptee group up here where I live. Just getting together with them is different than any other thing I do. Mm. And Sarah has her own experiences with it. It's connection, right?
Yeah. And then I think also for me, hearing the stories, it just continues to remind me of just how profound it is to be taken from your mother. It can be 50 years later, it can be 30 years later, it can be 70 years later. The sense of depth to that and the meaning to how intense that is,
yes,
never goes away. It's just, it shapes you. And I didn't think about those things until I started hearing these stories. And yes. And if I ever get off track and think, oh, it's not a big deal, I'm reminded always of what a big deal that is and how it shapes you. And it really, I had this moment the other night of just thinking about certain choices or in life. And, you know, that when you out the gate, you start with some and you're left and then you're told, at least in our era, of what a wonderful, lucky thing it is. You were loved so much that you were left. That imprinted every relationship that I have had from that point on. I had that moment the other night when I connected that, oh my gosh, that's why I have chosen unavailable people my whole life. And I would think it was, well, my parents got divorced. And no, it really starts with that early wound and the messaging around that abandonment that, you know, you were lucky to be abandoned.
Yeah, she's right.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I've really thought about a lot, thanks to your show, is this idea that was really sold to both birth parents and adoptive parents, that babies are like a blank slate, like an etch-a-sketch. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this baby, nothing is going on up here in the brain, and there are no real memories before three-ish anyway. So for all they'll know, you have always been their parent. And so much, not just in adoption, but so much about the brain and babies and things have advanced in terms of the knowledge going on there, that when I think about that, it's so sad and horrifying to me. I know that you both have kids. Once you have kids, I think that's when the illusion disappears. My oldest daughter, no one could hold her for the first year of her life except for her father and myself.
Right.
And it's like, she's not a blank slate.
I had a realization with a friend recently who was looking at pictures with me. I recently found out my biological mother had me for 6 days back and forth. Mm. And I thought it was just, originally I thought it was no time. Then when I got to know things, I thought it was 3 days. Now I have a letter that it was 6 days because she wasn't sure. She was just trying her hardest to figure this out. And I have some pictures with her that I've seen. And my friend noticed, she said, look at you in these pictures. You're very serene looking at her. You're a newborn, but I mean, you're very. And then just 3 weeks later, I'm in pictures getting baptized. and also some others with my family, where I am looking happy, but like vacant looking, like, who are these? I'm literally looking, and I was such a good baby and I didn't cry, of course, because I'm traumatized. We know that now. Right. I was silent and self-soothed, but I hadn't noticed that. She said, look at these pictures. You're not the same baby.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow. It's almost, it's weird when someone else sees it, because you almost can't see your life sometimes. I don't know. It takes an outsider sometimes who's not even adopted to say, look at that. And Sarah's right. This is a thing that all adoptees have, no matter the circumstance of their relinquishment, right?
Right.
You're not with your mother. That's why you're an adoptee. So you start life with that. What do they say when I was learning to be a teacher, I taught in the inner city and we talked about how kids come to school, say, in a nice area where my son grew up, fed and ready for school and blah, blah, blah. Maybe they had a good night's sleep. They're supposed to. In the inner city, a lot of kids are coming hungry, haven't had a good night's sleep, maybe had trauma. They haven't had breakfast, maybe dinner. So they're coming to school under the sand, like already at a deficit.
Right.
And I think about that sometimes with adoptees. You're coming into life with a deficit that you're always trying to build up to be on the level playing field. So you were good at mimicking and pretending. And I don't know. It's interesting.
It is. It really is. Also going back, Sarah, to what you're talking about, the issues that just follow you your whole life, particularly around relationships. I had the same MO. If someone was unavailable, that was who I was attracted to. And if they left or rejected me, it was devastating. I mean, just devastating. And it also triggered the people that I had long-term relationships, because I would find people who it would just clear, oh, they'll never leave me, which, you know, they might not have been the right partner for me. We might not have had the same interest or anything that would have made us a good couple, but it was like, at least this person will not leave me. It's a long, long tail to this thing.
I also feel like having started the podcast coming up on 3 years and having these kind of things blown wide open that I'd never thought about, reading all the books. And, you know, I just bought into the narrative. And again, I would pay lip service and therapy. Yeah, I was adopted and blah, 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 blah. I have abandonment issues. Never again, not connecting. So now it's only been 3 years of connecting to it. And it's, there's still so much that sometimes it feels overwhelming. Like, can I heal? Can I get through this? I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know that we ever heal. Right. I had a marriage counselor once tell me that my ex-husband and I married each other because we weren't available. Like, she said, oh, well, you both married each other. To her, it was so obvious because neither of you are available, but yet you're so loyal. We're both loyal and unavailable. I was like, she's crazy. Now I'm like, geez. And I'm still this person. You know, I work on it. We work on it. That's the thing. We, like Sarah said, it's daunting a little bit.
It is daunting. And the other thing I'm grateful to you for in your podcast is that I had gotten the primal wound, and I think I read a few chapters, but I couldn't deal with the name of the book.
Me neither.
Yeah. I was just like, so I'm just fundamentally forever damaged. That's how I interpreted that title, which is actually me projecting a lot of my feelings onto the title, because that's not what the title is saying, but that's how I interpreted that, that just fundamentally from the get-go, I was damaged. And that was already my self-perception, you know, mm-hmm. is that there is something yeah. fundamentally wrong with you. And the book is a great eye-opening book in terms of explaining things like chronic stomach issues as a child, the compliant versus the, what's the one who's not compliant, the is it like a defiant?
Rebellious.
The rebellious. It did explain a lot, but I think one thing your show helps me to do is to not feel like I am so incredibly damaged and so different mm-hmm. because there are so many other people who've experienced the same thing. And lots of people have trauma from so many other reasons. And I think what you've done with this show is that you have brought this trauma to light, and it doesn't have to be this sort of secretive. I mean, I had so much shame around feeling damaged.
You know, it's interesting. What popped into my head was thinking there's something wrong with you. Well, there's something very wrong, but it's not with us. It's with the way the system is that made it so that we were forced to be given up or whatever the circumstances may be. So there is something wrong. It's just not us. How could we not react the way that we did? We had no voice, even up into teenage years or whatever. Like, we had no voice, to no safe place to express these feelings we were feeling, no understanding of these feelings, just at least in my case.
No, there was nowhere to talk about it. I'd feel completely guilty if I talked to anybody about it at all, you know, just because I had a great family. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? You know what I mean? So you're like, something's just wrong with me. I had no idea that something was wrong with so many people out there, and yet we're not the problem, like Sarah said. But the problem has affected us, you know?
Right. The other thing that I think about a lot that you're doing is you're creating this amazing collection of oral histories. And just thinking about...
Good way of putting it.
Yeah, how oral histories in the past have often been used. They've been kind of a counter-narrative to the dominant narrative. And I'm wondering if you've ever thought about that, if what you're doing is creating and normalizing this perspective that has been missing.
Hadn't thought about that, but yeah. Kind of like what StoryCorps does on NPR, you know? That's a great way of putting it.
It is. I was thinking about after the Holocaust, the filmmaker, why am I blanking on his name, but...
Steven Spielberg.
Thank you. How he collected for the project for the people who were still alive to tell their narratives. That's interesting because we do have a huge collection now of 100 plus adoptees, maybe almost 100 of their stories.
The first season, you know, we were kind of all over the place and invited anybody on that, you know.
But that's true. I mean, we're in season 6 now, and all of us that are doing podcasts, you included, have an oral history. That's not the norm for sure. The norm of adoption is not the adoptee voice. So.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about this idea of your oral history in particular is where it might lead. Because I think people who are adopted and who've ever had contact with your show are probably very loyal listeners. And whoever we are in contact with, we spread that. I mean, my partner knows that I listen to your show and I share little tidbits that I'm learning from your show. And I'm wondering if you've ever thought about where all of these stories and also your own evolution from hearing these stories, where it could possibly lead.
You're like blowing our minds. Because I that's big.
You know, it would be nice if out in the real world, the mainstream world, that people would actually listen. You know, there's an important book, and that is American Baby. It was written by a non-adopted person, nobody who even had any connection to the triad, but, you know, stumbled upon adoption and wrote this book, which is history and one of those books that I feel should be required reading if you are an American. But people are resistant to it. They want to keep their thought that there's nothing but positivity around adoption. It's a lucky, wonderful, beautiful thing. And anybody that tries to say otherwise is biased or has their own issues or any of that. So we really, it's hard to get our voices out there when people don't want to hear it. We had one guest say that he didn't think things would really change until class action lawsuits were starting to be filed. And now there's a whole other set of stuff with surrogacy, which is going to be a whole other...
It's just going right into a whole other thing.
Right, right. I think about that a lot.
And these are money-making businesses. Yes.
Right, right. I feel like once the scales sort of fall from your eyes, which is what I'm hoping will happen with things like your podcast, you see things that just hit so wrong. And what I'm hoping is that if these stories become more normalized and break into mainstream, I'm not anti-adoption because I know sometimes that has to happen, but there is a completely different way of thinking about that baby than just having a baby.
And there's no reason to change their entire identity and their name. And
right.
Yes. And for sure, sometimes the natural parents cannot care for their children, or they've died, or whatever that might be. And there is a necessary action to be taken that they need caregivers. Why does that then entitle those caregivers to erase their history, change their name, call them mine, sever all contact with their former families? Like, none of that's okay in my mind.
None of it's healthy for the child. I was just on Twitter recently, X, sorry, Twitter, and I won't say X. And there was a story about Barbara Walters' daughter, right? And it was a very, it was People Magazine. So you're getting a People Magazine fluff thing, but I read it so differently than I would have years ago. Okay. I was like, isn't this interesting? It was about Barbara Walters adopting, about her daughter, who's very shy and out of the public spotlight, how great of a mother she was. They got through so much. Her daughter is now the inheritor of all her things. She sounds like a wonderful person, this adoptee. But there was this little section in there. Well, she went through this stuff in high school where she had to be sent away because of all these behavioral things. They don't know why. You know, it was like, you don't know why, really? She was having behavioral issues. And it was such the sub story that had nothing to do with the story. And it just, I'm sure everybody else reading the story is like, oh, how wonderful. And I'm reading it going, gross. Like, are they going to ask this poor young woman why she was sent away in high school? For it just hits you, the narrative, like you watch a TV show and they have the certain narrative of adoption. It just ruins the movie or the show for me now, too. Right. I can't.
Right.
It doesn't have to be negative. Like, we're not saying, like, you, okay, every adoptee, I had actually a really nice childhood. Not every adoptee has a, it has to be a horrible thing and show the world. It's not about them. It's about the parents and the other community, and their background isn't that important. And even in modern TV.
I was going to say, when you asked where it would, I would like to see, even in scripted, in feature films and scripted TV, like, let's have an adoptee perspective, an unfogged adoptee perspective. And, you know, reunion, as we say often, is not the ending. It's usually the beginning of something else, good or bad. But, you know, it isn't just neatly wrapped up with a bow. And when you were talking about Barbara Walters and the daughter going off, you know, I took a walk last night and I was thinking, because all this stuff about connecting the relationship choices and all that stuff, I also thought back to something that I learned since I moved here near my family in like 3.5 years ago. I learned, because I went through a really tough time as a teenager, ran away, and I learned recently that my father and stepmother considered putting me in foster care. And I just thought about what a difference, where would I have ended up had that actually been the case? And would that have been done to a natural born child? Probably not. You wouldn't give birth to a child and then say, they're giving you problems, they're unhappy, therefore I'm going to put them in foster care. That would only be considered for a child that had been adopted, that you don't maybe feel super connected to. So anyway, all these, that I know that's kind of a ran off with that and didn't have a conclusion to it, just in response to what you were saying.
Well, I think that I also struggled with, well, two things. One, teenagerhood and early adulthood. I definitely stopped being the compliant adoptee because so much of my interactions with my mom especially did not make sense to me. And I really questioned her judgment versus mine. And I also really, though, questioned my security in the family. I was told point blank that there were two things that if I did them, I would be disowned. And I try to think, well, is there anything that either of my children could do that would cause me to disown them? I can't think of anything, you know? And I have also heard horror stories of people who adopted children, and then it just didn't work out for them the way they thought it would. And they, like, the child did move on to another family. And I just think,
yeah, I have a friend up here on the Central Coast that was unadopted, given back, Like, let's test. I saw a Dateline recently where a kid was given back because he wasn't behaving properly. And it wasn't even about that. That was like a side story, too. They didn't even talk about how messed up that was.
I knew a woman who gave back two sisters who she'd adopted from Ethiopia, who within 8 months or something, she was like, yeah, this isn't working. And so she relinquished, but there was no guarantee that they would stay together. They were 7 and 9, and she still, even with that knowledge, still gave them back.
Yeah. I mean, for me, when I hear those stories, I think, well, no wonder you never really feel super secure in whatever relationship you're going into. Like, it takes a really long time to get behind a certain wall to build up trust. So it's so interesting. And I feel like we are talking about connection in a roundabout way. I feel like your show helped me connect parts of myself.
I'm so glad to hear that, really.
Yeah, but I'm wondering about the two of you, because I did notice an evolution in the show. The first part.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. The first part was definitely much more where I was at that same time, too. Like, oh, I had a great family, but, you know, there were some issues or some this or that. But it was still kind of in that narrative of, I don't know how, you guys use the term the fog. And so I think it's a good one. You're still sort of in that fog of like hearing that mainstream narrative. And then over time, you really change. So I'm wondering, was it the stories you're hearing from other people? Was it the reading you were doing? Or how did you start evolving in that way?
Sarah and I went through our own little mental depressions too and stuff. Why we're also trying to do this podcast. Yeah, I still do. But Primal Wound was big. It was like we didn't want to read, it's got the thing. That was very enlightening and opening up. That's when we decided we're just adoptees. We know adoptee stories. Let's stick there. But the journey of the adopted self is the one that kind of, for adoptees out there who may be listening, Journey of the Adopted Self by Betty Jean Lifton. That was the one for me that was extremely hard. It would be hard now to go back and read it 3 years into this. It would be hard to look at each chapter, but we had to, which is maybe good. It's a challenge. We're together. We're going over each chapter in detail. And it would mess with me at night. I was going through a little bit of my own trauma with an abandonment with a friend, and I had a move. And I think my husband thought, what's happened here? Right. Cause it was Sarah too. We are dark some days. It was hard. It's still hard. I think the reading and then having people, when we started to just be adoptee focused and being in groups and reading more on social media with other adoptees, was at the same time hearing these other stories going, wait a second, there'd be these aha moments. Sarah and I once said that we have to stop saying wow on the episode because we're both like, wow. But I think it was wow for us. You know what I mean? Because we're like newbies or something. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, I was just going to, someone said, another guest who used a great term, that adoptees fall into two camps, in the matrix or out of the matrix. And I really think that that's true. And the past couple of days, just a lot of stuff has been going on. One thing is my son's dog was diagnosed with something and it's been really heavy on the heart. And so I've been really emotional. But yesterday I was thinking it was so much easier being in the fog, Now everything is so highlighted of where I see all the things that I saw, that maybe I pushed aside, that I didn't belong or I didn't feel like a family member. Any of those things are now, it's true. Those things are actually true. All the things that I suspected, once the veil was lifted are actually true.
Right. Right.
And that can be very, very painful.
And scary. It's like seeing the little puppets, the puppeteer behind that. It's not magic anymore. And you can't really go back, right? So that's the thing. When you have knowledge and you have it, so you asked about us going forward. I think it will continue to be an evolution. And I think our goal is to on our podcast, everybody has their own thing on a podcast. So our podcast, we really just want any adoptee to tell their story, because every adoptee should be able to tell their story, and so few get out there to tell their story. So sometimes there is a little pushback with this adoptee or that adoptee is more in the fog or not in the fog, but at the same time, they're telling their story.
Right.
And they may revisit that 3 years later and go, well, that my story's changed. Our stories morph through this.
That's so interesting. And I'm thinking about this pain that you're talking about. I feel that as well, but I also feel a sense of lightness as well, that I have put down some of the self-blame that I was carrying for such a long time. You know, that it's like, okay, there is a reason why I felt these things. It wasn't just, you know, low self-esteem. It wasn't just whatever reason I could come up with, which there were many of them. It was going back to an issue that had been prevalent in my family. And I think I said on your show that I could list a long list of things that, looking back, I think that my parents did that I thought, wow, that was really not cool. But it just was more lonely and feeling like, how do I get into this group? Oh, I don't think I can. And that carried over into a lot of different groups, friendships, relationships for me.
Me too.
So in a way, it's not, I don't want to say I'm happy, but I'm relieved to have an answer.
There is some relief.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. I didn't read The Journey. Is it The Adoptive
Journey? Yeah.
I didn't read that. I let you guys read that for me as well.
That's what people say on our podcast. You read it for me. We do dissect them pretty well.
I know. And sometimes if they sound hard for you guys, I avoid them. But I'm so curious
to know.
Like
the Georgia Tan book.
Oh, that one I didn't even pick up. That one, you guys.
Yeah.
My friend up here offered to give me hers because she wasn't going to read it.
You're like, no, no, thank you. Why was that particular one hard for you?
It's just so harsh.
No, not Georgia Tan, but the is it?
Oh, Journey of the Adopted Self.
Oh, yeah.
Journey of the Adopted Self was hard for me because it highlighted where you just said, I was thinking about when you were speaking, is that I thought I was just sort of crazy inside and that everyone saw me as not crazy, as this functional human being, but they didn't really know I have this stuff going on in my head. And I just must, you know, and certain people who know you very well know some stuff about your head, right? But I was like, oh, hello. Had I known this, I would have done this. I would have parented different. I would have been more open. There's so many things.
Oh, yeah.
And no kidding why I was lonely as a kid. I used to hide and cry a lot. You know, I was sensitive at my house.
Yes.
Right? And everyone was very kind to me about it. It was just kind of, you know, I was the little sister and I was sensitive, but I am sensitive. And it was a big deal. Now I can say, yeah, I was. And yeah, that kind of sucked. And it's nice to have a voice for me to say, like, I don't, maybe it's the age too. I mean, we're in our 50s. I don't really, if someone doesn't like what I'm saying or they have a problem with it, I don't care now. Mm. You know, sometimes you care if someone's really, but not really. I'm kind of like, oh, well, that's, I went a long time pleasing everything. A really long time.
That's a you problem, not a me problem.
Yeah, exactly. Which is hard to hear, right? It's hard to switch that because I was a pleaser for so long. And I have a sticky right here on my desk that says no is a complete sentence. Okay. So if I can't do something right, I can say no now.
Right.
And it's still hard for me not to put an explanation around no or pleasing. And that I know a lot of people that aren't adopted are also pleasers. Okay.
Well, I think by nature of being a woman, we, you know.
We do that. But I had a lot, you know, I was raised to be really strong and my voice and everything. And I went off and did things, but inside it was such like, I better please this. They won't like me. I can't fit this group. There was a lot of that group not fitting. Even in my friend groups now, I think, do I fit? Do they really like me in good friend groups that I know? And, you know?
Yeah. No, I know that. I know that feeling so, so well. I would have loved to have done some things differently. Parenting is a big one for me because I understand now how my parenting was affected by being adopted as well. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I feel like this is a great time to sort of start thinking and working on these things, more digesting them, I'm not sure there are things that really need to be worked on anymore. They need to be digested and become a part of who you are.
It's acceptance of who we are too. Just accepting ourselves and going, okay, Sarah and I have a better relationship. You know, you talked about our relationship because we, I think, see each other with some grace in a different way too, because you're working together every week. That's, even if you're in a job, you have stuff, right? You're working, working, working. And we just have grace different. I try to see people with more grace, like, and myself, like, okay, I'm an asshole sometimes.
And Sarah, you've been nodding your head a lot. What would you add?
Well, first of all, that is, I found out that is a funny genetic thing. When I met my birth mother, my son's father was like, oh my God, you both do that nodding thing. So
yes,
I think that's just it's just a tick, a genetic tick passed down.
She's engaged.
Yes.
I was just thinking that she's engaged.
I'm engaged in an agreement. I mean, it is kind of an interesting time. I hearkened back to one of our guests who tells the story of when she found out that she was adopted. She was like 6 or 7. She's New Zealand. She was shocked. And she said, you're not my mother. And knew at like a 6, 7 years old. I don't belong here. What am I doing here? And it just amazing to me, the different stages that this happens to people. It took me till I was, you know, in my 50s, and it took Annie till she was at 6, 7 years old, you know, and,
right.
And then everybody has their own process. Some people never. And in some ways, that's fine. You know, just always think, again, in the matrix or not in the matrix. All those things were kind of going through my head.
Reading a book now by Susan Kiyohito. She was doing this at 17, this brave stuff, 19, 18. And I'm like, she was so brave. Because when I'm reading it, I'm like, gosh, I probably would have left. Someone said something, I'd cry and leave. I used to run away from anything controversial, right? So she was so brave. That's what Sarah was saying about Annie. Everybody should listen to Annie, that episode. Because she's funny, but right on about things.
For me, my 20s was when I really started fantasizing that I had a perfect birth family out there. And that's another thing that's been great with your show, too, is that to hear that whatever you're imagining about your birth family, you don't know how it's going to go. This is the one thing that does make me a little bit sad about adoption, is that finding your birth family is not going to heal that wound that you're feeling. I know that I definitely felt actually more grateful for my adoptive family in a certain way, because I tried to think about what would this have been like, you know, and I'm wondering if either of you felt that too.
I have pushback about that because not always, but I feel certainly for my birth mother and that the trauma of giving up a child, like being given up, giving up a child shapes you. And I would imagine would maybe cause some mental illness, because how do you reckon with that? How do you go through your life? Even if you think it was the best thing, or how do you reckon with that? So when I hear adoptees come on the show and they say, oh my God, you know, we had one in particular who was like, you know, said his dad was like white trash or something. And I just, dads are different. But I think that the trauma of giving up a child maybe shapes you. And that later when you meet that person, you think, oh, good thing. But is it because, you know, chicken or egg, you know, it's, I don't know. So we don't know that we are living in alternate universes. Our adoptions, as Moses Pharaoh says, is an alternate universe.
And that is a really good point.
My biological mother had a really interesting life after she gave me up. Okay. I mean, very interesting and jet setty and kind of wild and really neat woman. Then she died very young. So a person in my life recently said to me, well, I mean, she would have been amazing. And probably if she had aged, she'd be welcoming, because she always wrote about me and wore a necklace with my picture. So she loved me. But she said, you would have had this like chaotic, crazy. And I said, well, we don't know that she would have done that. I mean, because she was this really not doing that before. She was working and took care of me during pregnancy and wanted to keep. We don't know that she wouldn't have been mother of the year. So, I mean, you can't say she probably did go a little bit more wild and a little bit more. She changed her name several times to start over as a new identity. I know a boyfriend of hers who said, she said to him, oh, you don't want to marry me. I've done some things. You know, she's 27. What, that does mess with you. But Sarah said, this is, look at us. We've all had children. And you said, you can't imagine for anything why you wouldn't stand by him. Like, no matter what our kids do, we're going to stand by them.
Right. Right.
No matter what, good, bad, or the ugly. So that's a big thing. It does cause people to change. So I hate that argument because a lot of people think, well, you have this great family, you would have had a bad one. You don't know that. And people can also be raised poor and be wonderful families exactly. too, by the way, because a lot of it was about wealth back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Still maybe is. I shouldn't say back in the day, you know. Speaking of the Georgia Tan times, just wealth doesn't make you a better parent.
Right.
And give you more love. Love is love, right? So.
Right. Those are all really good points. Yeah. And it's true. It's a completely alternate universe and you have no idea what.
We don't know.
I'm just thinking as we wrap up here, if the idea of connection resonates with either of you, your show resonates with this theme of connection for me, but I'm wondering if it does for you.
I mean, connection is really the most important thing in the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you need to find the people that you can connect with. And I think for one thing for me is I mean, I'm out of the fog, but reckoning with coming out of the fog is just understanding that the people I need to have in my life are people I need to connect with on a deeper level where I feel safe. To me, connection is feeling safe.
Hmm. And I feel safe in our podcast and our space with adoptees and here with you. Like, I speak more openly with you than I probably do half the people in my life on a weekly basis. So it is a safe connection. And there was a point Sarah made earlier. I just feel that we have so much more connection to give and to get. Like, I feel like we get from our podcast as much as we, you're telling us how much you got from us and listening. We get every time we have an interview filled up or touched or new thoughts that go in our heads. And so the connecting is going to continue, I guess. It's a continued connection. And here's a thought too, just for non-adoptees that may listen to your podcast. I think it's interesting when people, I think family is a right to know your family. You have a right to know where you're from. Because if you ever watch families talk, they brag about things in their families, even if they don't know about it. Oh, my uncle in Italy did this and it's all. And people love to talk about it. But if you bring it up, it's like, oh, you know, it's not strange. But it's like, I'm sorry. I'm from people too. We're all from people.
Right.
And I think that's a human. From the beginning of time, adoption wasn't always a secret, as we know. That's a modern way of financial transactions and things that have gone on. People need to know who their people are.
Right.
That's how you feel grounded to the earth and to life, right?
Yeah. Thank you both so much. Can you tell people where they can find your podcast and the name of it again? I'll put it on the show notes, but still.
It's Adoption, The Making of Me. We are on every podcast platform, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are on YouTube. We are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. We're everywhere. And our website is adoptionthemakingofme.com.
And if you are an adoptee listening to this and you are looking for community, I will plug both their podcast and the Patreon group that you are starting for adoptees just to check in once a month and hang out and chat.
Yeah, it's not like led by us. It's a coffee with other adoptees.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that.
We do too. And also, people should listen to your episode on our podcast, which came out in January of 2024. And it was a really good one.
Yep. It got a lot of good feedback.
Yeah.
Lots of good feedback.
I want to thank you guys how you wrapped up at the end. It made me feel very good about that experience. Thank you both. And please continue to do this amazing work. It really is so beneficial.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
You're listening to Art Heals All Wounds. Thank you so much to Sarah Reinhart and Louise Brown for being guests on the show today. I admire the work that they do so much. I really feel that they're agents of change for how adoption is approached, how we can do more to support families who want to keep their children, and how we can help support adoptive families. And mostly, how do we center children in all of this? Thanks, Sarah and Louise, for creating Adoption: The Making of Me, that opens up this space to share and connect. Does creativity play a role in your life? I'd love to hear about it and share it on the show. Did you know that every time you share your story, you help someone else? It's absolutely true. I'd love to share your voicemail to the show. Just go to ArtHealsAllWoundsPodcast.com and click on the big button that says, "Leave a message for Pam at Art Heals All Wounds." I'll share it on the show. If you want to support this podcast, you can also leave me a small tip through the Buy Me a Coffee link on my website. This podcast is completely independent, so every little bit you give means a lot. Thanks for listening. The music you've heard in this podcast is by Ketsa and Lobo Loco. This podcast was edited by Eva Hristova.